Hello, I'm Father Ray Petrucci. Welcome to Thoughts for the Week. We are going to get into a fascinating area today, and I have to go about the task of announcing my co-host and my guest, but before then, it is always an invitation that I extend to you, our listeners, to please feel free to contact us. We'd love to hear from you. You have an idea, thought of some topic you'd like us to explore. We'd be happy to try to do that for you. Now, if you'd like to contact us, please do so. I'm going to give you two avenues of accomplishing that. First is the typical letter, writing a letter, putting a stamp on an envelope, and I would like you to address that to Thoughts for the Week, Post Office Box 7466. That's Post Office Box 7466, Greenwich, Connecticut. Now, the zip code in Greenwich is 06836. That's 06836. If you're on the computer and would prefer emailing us, please do so. Send your comments to clemons10@aol.com. That's CLEMONS, the number 10, at AOL.com. And while you're on the computer, I invite you to go to our internet magazine, Spirituality for Today. And you can find that at this website, spirituality.org. That's spirituality.org. You'll find some articles and features. Also, you can listen to our radio program. You can listen to Thoughts for the Week on the computer, and we have some archive programs. So, and you could do this at your leisure, which is always a nice thing. Well, let me now get to our program for the day. First, a warm welcome to my co-host, Dorothy Rivera. Welcome, Dorothy.
Thank you, Father. Always a pleasure to be with you.
And delightful to have you here. Also, I'm delighted to be able to welcome as our guest today, and help me, I hope I get to pronounce the last name correctly, Amy Zajac.
Yes.
Oh, I feel so happy. Amy is the director of Family Directions, also the director of social media for one fantastic organization, Catholic Charities, and this within the Diocese of Bridgeport, Connecticut. Now, I'd like to welcome Amy to the program first, and then we're going to get into what she's involved with. Now, Amy, welcome first.
Thank you so much for having me.
And delighted to have you. Now, I guess I got to ask you first off, what is the focus of Family Directions?
Well, Family Directions is formerly the adoption program of Catholic Charities. We changed our name a few years ago just to make it a little bit more user-friendly, but we provide pregnancy counseling services to women experiencing an unplanned pregnancy, as well as providing adoption services to couples and singles looking to adopt here within the Diocese of Bridgeport. And the goal is to provide permanency for children.
Now, I know an order such as the Sisters of Life in the diocese mm-hmm. are involved with this. Now, what do you provide? Now, matter of fact, the adoption service, I presume, comes primarily through women with an unplanned pregnancy who really desire to give their child up for adoption?
Correct. We provide those services, the counseling services, to women who are looking to place unplanned children who are coming from unplanned pregnancies. We also provide services in connecting families with two resources if they're interested in adopting from other avenues, say international adoption. And we've been doing that since, I'd like to say, prior to 1996. 1996 is when Catholic Charities decided to take a leap into the international adoption arena when we started a China adoption program. Mm. And we've been doing that since then. So we do a variety of different things. Our goal and what we see as our mission is to help in whatever way we can. You know, someone comes to us with an idea and says, I want to try to adopt this way. As long as it's within the realms of being, you know, legal and feasible according to the state of Connecticut and, you know, the federal government, we'll provide the assistance. And if we can't do it, we'll connect them to the resources that can.
Why has adoption become so difficult? Because as you speak, it seems that it's easy, yet what you hear is all the contrary.
So whenever someone calls me, the first thing I say, yes, it is difficult, but when there's a will, there's a way. Okay, I don't ever want anyone to lose hope about being able to adopt. Someone who wants to raise a child or to bring a child into their family should always try their best to explore all the avenues possible. And it has become more difficult. There are a declining number of children on the domestic side available for placement. One, because the teen birth rate has declined drastically. That's not a bad thing.
It's a good thing.
That's not a bad thing. But from the same perspective, there's the international arena, which was booming for a while, has become quite restrictive. Again, that's not a bad thing. Those restrictions were put in place to protect the children. Mm-hmm. A lot of things on the international side, when it first started to get going, were done without rules, without protocols. And since the enactment of the Hague Treaty for adoption, things have become more restrictive. Are things too restrictive? To some point, there's a lot of paper pushing going on, but at the same point, you have to protect children, and we fully believe in that. There are still children available through the state system, through DCF. Those children are always available for adoption, but the majority of people, when they talk about adopting, they're looking for healthy newborn infants, and that is where there's been the biggest decline. So here in Connecticut, a lot of people go outside the state of Connecticut. You know, I like to talk about the country. When you look at the map of the United States and you think about the size of the different states, Connecticut's very small. You know, we're not big. Think about Texas. Texas is huge. So people go to larger states where there might be a larger opportunity to adopt and where the laws might be a little bit different, because there aren't universal adoption laws. Every state has different laws, which make it a different process to go through.
You would think that with countries like India and China, where there are so many children suffering from malnutrition and hunger and even human trafficking, that the politics would be, the government would be more interested in getting help to these children if there are parents or families willing to take them.
So with regard to human trafficking, the Hague Treaty was put into place to prevent that. And it's done a great job. There's been so many restrictions put into place that when issues of crisis have come up, I'd like to think about the Haiti earthquake. You know, we fielded so many calls from people saying, I want to go get children who need homes, and churches were trying to go down and rescue children. You can't just do that because there's so many processes in place to prevent that, because these are children that may have families and that are identified with families in place.
Yeah.
So these processes were put in place to kind of limit child trafficking and prevent child trafficking, and that has improved. It's not perfect. You know, nothing's perfect at this point, but it's better. In terms of countries like China and India, there's a lot of cultural issues at play with how they place their children. China always had the one-child policy, which is why so many children came from China. And then they slowly shifted their rules and their policies for placing children, making it a little bit more difficult to adopt from China. When I first started at the agency in 1996, I was directly out of grad school. I got my BSW here at Sacred Heart, and then I went on to Fordham University. And I didn't even know what adoption was back then. But when I first started, China adoptions were booming. Our program was getting referrals every 6 months. And then it slowly increased and increased and increased to where it was taking 7 years for a referral. No one's going to wait 7 years. You and I,
especially if they wanted an infant.
Right.
Yes.
Well, and so some of it came to be China and their culture was not allowing the placement of these children. So children are still available, but they're looking to place different types of children. They're looking to place older children, harder to place children, children with special needs issues. And still, you know, the majority of people who are looking to adopt right now are looking for as young of a child as possible with as few medical issues as possible. There's no judgment there. Nothing's wrong with that. But that's, you know, people can handle what they can handle.
Mm.
And that's how we guide our families. You know, we talk to them about if it's not right for you, it's not right for the child. You can't force anyone to adopt a child that's not going to fit into their home.
Into the family.
Correct. Mm. Correct.
Now, in taking a look, we seem to be more on the international level now, which is really good. I like taking a look at that. Are there countries, talk about The Hague,
mm-hmm.
Is that universal, or are there countries that are a little bit easier than others? And
so The Hague is not completely universal yet. There are some countries that still don't fully comply by The Hague. Are there any countries that are easier than others? At this point in time, no, because eventually you do have to go through the U.S. government, and you do have to go through U.S. immigration. That makes it hard. I'll toot my own horn a little bit here and say that agencies that work with international adoptions have to be Hague accredited. We are one of two agencies in the state of Connecticut that have Hague accreditation. It's something we're very proud of. We recently just got reaccredited for another 5 years. So we are able to help people within Connecticut to be approved to adopt and move through that process. We may not place the children with them, but because of that, we can help them be prepared for the referral process. With that in mind, normally I only work within Fairfield County in the Diocese of Bridgeport for domestic situations. Mm. For international situations, I work throughout the state of Connecticut. So there's some days I'm driving up to Groton, mm-hmm. Manchester, to do home studies. And it's, you know, there's a need because not many agencies do this work. It's very time-consuming work because the requirements to approve a family for an international adoption are significant. Writing that document, I always say I feel like I'm a lawyer at times because you have to cross your T's, dot your I's, make sure all the wording complies with the law, complies with the state of Connecticut, the country that the child is coming from. It's complex work.
Now, when we spoke, and you did mention Texas too, and I just keep thinking of, oh boy. Now, what about, are you involved in any way with those who are part of that immigration border problem? Because
no.
I know the kids were going all over the country.
Right. Yeah. So we've been keeping an eye on it. Catholic Charities has immigration services, and we're very proud of our immigration services. Recently, a colleague of mine, Maria Palacios, was sent down to the border to help the agency down there work with families. But at the same point in time, in terms of the adoption piece, international social services is connected with agencies across the country. We're not set up to help those children. You're talking older children. We generally place infants when you're talking domestic placements. And in terms of international placements, we place children, and specifically from China is what our accreditation approves, not from other countries at this point in time. So we're not geared toward that work. We're keeping track of it only because it pertains to the area that we work in. And we need to be aware of what's going on, especially when it comes to how it could impact clients, how it could impact the scene of adoption.
And the future of the children also.
And the future of the children, correct.
You need to know where that child is coming from, and will he not be involved in a dispute later on.
Yeah, there were a lot of concerns I had with all of that going on. Some of the children, you know, any child that's placed for adoption internationally, according to The Hague, has to have documentation that they're either an orphan or that parental rights have been terminated. Mm-hmm. And without those documents, an adoption can't occur. They also need to be able to provide a birth certificate for the child, all documentation. So if you can't provide that, an adoption can't occur. And there's been a lot of talk back and forth about the children at the border. It's a hot button.
Well, and if you need paperwork for the child, in many of these countries, these children are born in remote villages.
Correct.
Where there is no documentation.
Correct. I'm getting a lot of calls right now from former clients. clients who adopted children who are now teenagers and concerns about, is my child truly a citizen? That's a big concern for people. So we go back to the files. We say, you know, we look through them, we review them. And anyone who's come in after 2000 is automatically a U.S. citizen. But if they didn't get that certificate of naturalization, that's problematic. In certain circumstances, and every country is different, how you come in and whether both parents traveled for the adoption. There's different caveats that could make or break whether or not that child's a citizen. So we've had a lot of situations, you know, teenagers in high school planning to go abroad for a field trip or to go abroad to study. The parents saying, will my child get back in the country? These are concerns that people have for international adoptees, and it's a very real concern.
Another real sensitive issue, and this would apply to both domestic and international, would be the well-being of the child and also the parents' concerns over mental health and if there's any drug addiction problems. How do you address that?
Well, it's difficult. In terms of when we work with birth mothers, it's a very sensitive issue. You know, a pregnant woman's coming to us scared, often alone, not expecting to have been in this situation to begin with. We ask pointed questions. We actually have a sheet of questions that we go through in terms of genetic information. Questions about, you know, mental health, drug abuse, family makeup, everything from start to finish. We can't do lie detector tests. We can't force answers. We're hoping that these women are as honest as possible, and for the most part, they are. Especially now so, currently, because adoption is not as taboo as it used to be in the past. So we try to get as much information as we possibly can. How accurate that information is can never be guaranteed. And when we talk with our adoptive parents about there are no guarantees in life, even when you have a biological child, you know, many people have had brought children to this world where something comes up in 5 years that they never expected. The mental health issue is the hardest part because that's the biggest unknown. And we've had experiences with older adoptees lately and their parents coming back and saying, this has happened, we're experiencing a problem, whether it's bipolar disorder or depression or anxiety. And the parents, there's no blame. The adoptive parents don't have blame. It's their theory for most of them is, this child was meant to be with me, this is my child, and we're going to work through it. It's hard, you know. I also do a different piece of work where we call it right to know. And when we return back, you know, Catholic Charities has been in operation for over 100 years.
Yes.
And as long as we've been open, we've provided adoption services. So I have very old files because I'm not allowed to get rid of any of them. So I have to go back and help people search for their birth parents or get non-identifying information. And it's interesting when you talk to people and they explain, you know, their situations and their life, and you try to find out information about people. And sometimes, you know, from those time periods, you know, 50s and 60s, not everything was provided was factual because there was a fear. It's not like that as much now because adoption has been so publicized and talked about, not just on venues like this, but in television, in movies, celebrities coming out and talking about having adopted or being adopted. The stigma is not there. So that has helped tremendously. But it's hard to sometimes provide people with complete sense of relief. There's a lot of faith involved in this process.
You know, be it a natural child or an adoptive child, nobody is going to give you guarantees as to how that child is going to develop.
No, of course.
Because sometimes you ask, how can two wonderful parents have a child who has lost his way?
We talk about, I mean, we have a behavioral health program at work, so we're very well versed in that process as well. And that's the good thing about Catholic Charities. You come to one of our programs, you don't just get that program. You know, there's everything under one house, behavioral health, food, immigration, housing, it's all there. So we provide a great community of services, and that's something we offer to our adoptive clients as well, especially when it comes to the counseling services. If something comes up, we're here for you. I get calls from clients, you know, I've been doing this for 18 years now. I may look and sound young. I know. But some of my first clients have started to contact me, which one makes me feel old, and two is just reminds me of how long I've been doing this. And they remember that we've told them, you're always welcome to come back and we're here to help you. And we've connected them. If we can't provide the service, we will find it for you. And that's what we do, because we're not going to leave people out there just on their own.
You know, and I also think that today the adoptive parents are more receptive as to allowing the child to find out who the real parents are if that child so desires. In years past, that was not the case.
Well, they kind of have to now. The world is getting smaller every day. We all know this. There's social media, for instance.
I'm about to ask about that. Yeah.
So I've had clients find birth parents and adoptive, you know, children that they've placed on social media. I find people that I'm looking for my work on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. So the world in that respect is getting smaller. And when I place children, I always tell the adoptive parents, and I have been for 18 years, but more so now, this is not something that should be kept a secret from the child. You know, your relationship with your child starts with trust. And if you start off this relationship by this being a lie, what else is going to happen? Because one day the child's going to find out. And then they're going to look at you and say, why? So you have to keep open and be honest about adoption. But you have to be open, because when you get that call from the birth mother or from the agency or from whoever, the child should be prepared for it and know it's coming. In addition to social media, and this isn't a topic that I enjoy talking about because it's troubling to me, DNA testing has taken over the world, and people are going to Ancestry.com, 23andMe, and they're swabbing their cheeks, sending it off, and trying to find relatives by DNA testing. I don't know what to say other than it's not 100% accurate. I've had circumstances where I've gotten phone calls, and some have been accurate. You know, I found my sister on Ancestry.com DNA. I look at the records. It's a match. I've had instances when I've gotten the call, I've looked at the records, it's not a match. So I caution people to be careful with that kind of thing. Also, the idea of my DNA being out there somewhere scares me a little bit, but it's a small world, and the world is changing. So we have to understand that things are going to move and be different, especially in adoption, where people are now presenting themselves online and on social media that they're interested in adopting. And if you're looking to place your child, please call us at 1-800-WHATEVER.
I know, it's become commercialized, which is unfortunate.
Well, you know, it's always been a little bit commercialized, not publicly, but behind the scenes, because the birth mother, back in the day, it was just a matching process. You would come into the agency, and we have these old videos from back in time that were black and white, and a doctor would be looking at the baby and said, oh, he has the same features as the Callahans, and we should place him with the Callahans. That's how it would happen. Like, they'd look at the baby and think about who the baby looked like in their list of files. Nowadays, that slowly transitioned to where the birth mother would come in and want to know more about the family. It would give a sense of peace. So we now have families starting to create these profiles, almost marketing themselves because they want to get a leg up on the person next to them. And you try to present not a book of profiles, but profiles that meet the criteria that she's looking for. Present them and let her make her choice based on what she's most comfortable with. If you're placing your baby with a family, you should be comfortable in that decision. So it provides a sense of relief, a sense of comfort. In some circumstances, there are open adoptions happening where the families have an ongoing relationship. That does happen. So there is no anonymity. But at the same point in time, you know, a woman placing her child with a family is a very powerful thing. And she deserves to have some say in the process.
I could see in the future where that child grows up and there's some, well, desire to know about medical issues, tendencies toward diseases and everything. Yeah, a family history would be even more and more valuable.
Yeah, we get calls like that a lot. It's interesting. There's a sort of a life cycle to wanting to know. And there comes a point, you know, when women are about to have children of their own or men are married and their wife is about to give birth, where they say, well, I'm missing a piece of my information. I need to know more. And they'll contact us and we give them whatever we have. But if they need more, we try to find the birth parent to get more information. Even if they don't want to meet, birth mothers tend to understand and will update their medical information for us.
We're running so close to the end of the program. I don't even want to. I'm wary about introducing something, but let me at least get this across to our listeners, and that is information on how to contact Catholic Charities, mm-hmm. and not only in Diocese of Bridgeport, but in general.
Correct.
And this would apply, I guess, both to a person who feels the need to want to give their child mm-hmm. for adoption and. Mm-hmm. First, the one looking for, parents looking for adoption.
Correct. So, first and foremost, anyone who wants information can call me directly. I have a direct line at 203-416-1336. But we also have a website here for Fairfield County. It's www.ccfairfield.org.
Well, they can Google. Yeah. People can Google today.
And they can. They can Google
us. It's easier to Google than to learn all these.
It is easier to Google us. You could also jump off the diocesan website to reach us. Mm. We have Facebook. We have Instagram. We have Twitter. We have it all.
Well, that's a mystery to me, personally. But definitely Catholic Charities, period.
Yes, Catholic Charities of Fairfield County.
And you'll have that with you.
Correct.
Well, of course, we were speaking with Amy Zajac, who is the Director of Family Directions, which is sort of a newer name toward mm-hmm. The effort of Catholic Charities toward adoptive services, and also Director of Social Media. We didn't really get into the old social media end of it, because I find it interesting to see how you use that for your work in Catholic mm-hmm. Charities. Part of me is saying, oh boy, here's a way of finding out. It looks like everybody finds out everything about everybody all the time, but also to advertise and to make that real. Well, maybe mm-hmm. we'll get into that in another program. But Amy, first, let me thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Also, thank you for giving us yet another program. And what I'd like to do is just one more quick information about that phone number you mm-hmm. gave. Very slowly, please.
Yes. It's 203-416-1336, and that is a direct line to Family Directions.
Okay, thank you very, very much, Amy. Thank you, all our listeners. Please join us again next week.